I'm going to let you in on something. Preaching, speaking, giving a lesson can be difficult. And as easy as Dave makes it out, I am not that good. So often I get trapped in my own head. Did I prepare enough? Is what I'm going to say relevant? Is what I'm going to say even necessary? And songs like that destroy me. And it should destroy each and every one of you. Last Sunday evening, I believe about 15 of us had the opportunity to go to the Reseda Church of Christ down in the valley. And the Reseda Church of Christ offered and hosted the Unity Worship for all of the churches, all of the people that would want to attend in Ventura County and in L.A., around in the L.A. Or the San Fernando Valley. And it was incredible. It is what I imagine heaven on earth looks like. The songs were beautiful, the lessons were encouraging, but more than that, the unity that I saw with everybody that attended. Different colors, different languages, different backgrounds, different cultures. We had the old, we had the young, we had babies, we had everybody. And we were all in one room praising God. If heaven, if all heaven is us together, the church, singing that song over and over and over again, that is a good heaven. That is a heaven that I want to be a part of. That is a church that I want to live in. A group of people, of sinners, of broken individuals coming together and claiming that God is holy. That He is worthy of our worship and our praise. If you have your Bibles, be turning over to John chapter 6, because that is where we're going to be this Sunday morning. The reason I feel like I have been in my head too much is because the miracle that we are going to be reading about today is a miracle I am used to, and that is very dangerous for me. I, like you, have probably read this miracle 100 times. I have spoken on this miracle 100 times. I have led a class on this miracle 100 times. And so presenting it to you, and I don't imagine I'm going to bring anything new to the table because there is nothing new under the sun. But I do want to confess something. This miracle has many problems, and it frustrates me. It frustrates the Gen X side of me, the millennial side of me. Because if Jesus can feed the 5,000, then why couldn't he feed the 50,000? Why didn't he feed the 50,000? There are many miracles that we look at and we praise and we find encouragement and excitement from, and we look and look at what Jesus is capable of doing, that Jesus is capable of raising Lazarus from the dead. Praise God. But what about the widow's son? What about all the other people who died in and around Jesus? Jesus is able to heal a paralyzed person. Praise God, but he wasn't the only one. He was in the midst of paralytics. He was in the midst of disabled people. And yes, he healed many, but why didn't he heal all? Why didn't he feed everybody? You see, this miracle, before we even read it, it challenges our understanding of the relationship between ability and obligation. Meaning that if Jesus has the ability to do something, at what point is he then obligated to do it? And let me put it in a different way. If you had the cure for Zika, or if you had the cure for Ebola, or if you had the cure for cancer, wouldn't you feel obligated to use it? Wouldn't you feel obligated to give it freely to everybody, anybody, and make sure that they had it, even if they didn't ask for it? Wouldn't you feel an obligation to do that? We look at most of these miracles with wonder, but our world looks at them with disgust, or worse, as being irrelevant. These miracles are great acts of God, but I do not want you to believe that our world thinks that. Our world sees most of these miracles and thinks, well, why couldn't Jesus have done more? Why did he stop at the 5,000? Why didn't he just go around and feed everybody? So we have to ask, as the church and as individuals and as fellow Christians, we have to ask these questions in reading about this miracle. What is the purpose of Jesus feeding so many people? And who was this miracle for? Is it for you? Is it for me? Is that why it's recorded? Is it for the 5,000 people who are hungry? Or is it for the 12 apostles who seem to not get the point of what Jesus was trying to do? So let's start reading in John chapter 6, starting in verse 1. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Lifting up his eyes then, and seeing that a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread, so that these people may eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they for so many?" This is the social justice Jesus. This is the feed the hungry Jesus that my generation also loves. I want to be a part of a church like this, because we know what Jesus is going to do. We know that he is going to step in and he is going to feed everybody there. And I love this Jesus. I want to be a part of this church. But here is our opening problem. People are hungry. People are hungry. And this connects us to this miracle here, because today we are surrounded by people who are hungry. But I have to ask, why did Jesus need to test Philip about addressing people's hunger? What has Jesus said or done in the past that required a test like this one? See, Jesus believed that he had instructed Philip enough to know what to do in this situation. He believed that he had done enough to show Philip the confidence to step in here and do something about this problem. And I imagine that Jesus is thinking of many, many possibilities that his apostles could do to alleviate their hunger. We see how easily Jesus is able to turn water into wine. So we know that food must not be an issue with God. So Jesus is imagining all of these things that Philip and Andrew and Peter could step up and do miraculously to feed everybody around him. But like me, or I imagine like me, as I would be in this situation, they can only see what is in front of them. They only see what little amount is in front of them. See, we may know that Jesus is capable of doing the impossible, but are we confident that we know enough to do likewise? We have all seen Jesus working in our lives and in the lives of others. I can share so many stories about God showing up miraculously in the lives of others. I have seen God demonstrate compassion and service to widows, to widowers, to the poor, and to the hungry. But do I believe that I can do likewise? Do we believe that as a church we are capable of doing the impossible? Now, how many of you have learned from your parents or maybe your grandparents by being thrust into the middle of the problem? See, my grandpa would often teach me to do something by giving me a 30-second safety course and then letting me fail on my own, right? How many of you ever learned to swim by being thrown into a pool? Yes, Bruce, me and you, buddy. Yes. My uncle thought it was a great idea, because I was 2 at the time, to teach me how to swim. And so he did that by putting me on his shoulders, and he's like 6'3", by the way. He's an enormous person. And then jumping into the pool and seeing what I would do. And surprise, I didn't drown. My grandpa, I lived with him for a summer, and I love this man so much, but he has no idea how to teach somebody properly how to do something. He used to work in a factory, a sheet metal factory, and he built air ducts for buildings, air conditioning ducts. And so he worked and lived around sheet metal all of his life. And so he was used to these machines. And so during this summer, it was my job to help him. I had to learn what a work ethic was, because I didn't at the time. I was only 15. And so one of the machines he brought me to was this enormous, awesome-looking bending thing. And what you did is you fed sheet metal. Yeah, it tells you how much I paid attention at the time. What you do is you fed sheet metal into this, and you pull the lever, and you would bend the sheet metal. And that's all this machine was supposed to do. But I was not paying attention at all. Again, I was 15. If you didn't know this, I have ADHD really, really bad. And so I'm looking at every other awesome machine in this factory. It was like working with Transformers. The cartoons, not the movies. It was very distracting, to say the least. And so he taught me, again, he gave me a 30-second crash course on how to operate this thing, and then he left. No goodbye, no good luck, no don't chop your fingers off. It was, this is how you do it, keep your head out of the press, and you won't die. So there you go. And so I was left to succeed or fail on my own. And it's safe to say I failed quite a bit. But I am thankful that Jesus is a better teacher. That Jesus is a better teacher than even we are. Because teaching my children something, I get so impatient. I want my kids to instinctively get how these things are supposed to work. And thank God that Jesus has far more patience with us. That Jesus instructs and he teaches and he believes that we have enough knowledge to succeed. Because how many of you have seen God succeed in your life and in the lives of others? How many of you have seen God show up in your life where you can pinpoint and you can show where God demonstrated his love and his compassion for you? We know enough to succeed, and Jesus is confident that we do. But like the apostles, it is easy to forget where we stand within the ongoing story of God's people. See, God is used to doing the incredible and the miraculous and the impossible through ordinary people. Moses is a great example of this. Moses being an ordinary farmer, an ordinary shepherd, sorry. And God is able to use Moses to do extraordinary things. Read through the minor prophets. The minor prophets are very violent, but they are very good books because it shows you what God is able to do through little, insignificant individuals. He takes these people, these little people, and he sends them to kings. And he sends them to people of authority, and he tells them, you use my words. And they're able to move mountains, to change countries. God is used to doing the impossible. He split the Red Sea. How hard is it for us to feed the hungry? God has done wonders through us. Why would we ever think it is impossible that we are capable of doing the impossible? This was once presented to me in the form of a story, and I feel like it is pertaining to prayer, but it also, it can connect with so many other things. Imagine, if you will, that Jesus is taking you through a library. And as you look around in amazement, you see that the shelves are full of books. Tomes, as far as the eye can see, as high as the eye can see. It is just completely covered in books. And as Jesus is leading you through this library, you find out he's taking you to this table in the middle. And on this table is full of pamphlets, just little tiny pamphlets. And you pick one up, and you're looking at it, and you're seeing, oh, these are all of the things that Jesus has done for me. These are all of the miracles that have happened in my life. This is where he healed me here, but he tested me here. This is my story in the form of a pamphlet. And so you look to Jesus and you say, all right, I know what the pamphlets are, but what's up with these books? What are in all of these books? And he responds, those are all of the things I could have done for you if you would have only asked. How often do we restrict ourselves because we think we are insufficient? How often do we restrict ourselves because we do not know enough? We have not seen enough. The truth is, Jesus wants us to make the attempt. Don't worry about your failure. Don't worry about your mistakes, because there will be many of them. And surprise, surprise, you are in a room full of mistakes. You are in a room full of failures. Look around you if you want, if you dare. Don't look at a lot of people, but this is a room full of failures, of brokenness, of sinners, of people who haven't gotten it right, who, like the apostles, have forgotten where they stand within the story of God. And I am chief among them. But we cannot stop making the attempt. We must attempt to do what God has told us we are capable of doing. But notice verse 9. 9 reads, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they for so many?" Andrew presents a human question. What are they for so many? And this is the obstacle that we face in doing the impossible. When we look with our earthly eyes and we try to imagine what is heavenly possible, we don't see much. When we view heavenly possibilities through the lens of earthly capabilities, we will always come up short. When we try to see this earth and what we are capable of through the eyes of only what we see and not the eyes of God, not the eyes of heaven, we will always fall short. We will never be enough, we will never have enough, and we will never overcome. We must teach our eyes to see beyond this world, to see the unseen waiting on the other side. We must have faith. Paul puts it like this in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 18. "As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen, for the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." This is how we are supposed to view our problems. This is how we are supposed to view those who are in need, not with only what is in front of us, but through the eyes of God and what He is capable of doing. And look at how Jesus responds to this human question by feeding everybody. And the apostles are left with 12 baskets full of leftovers. So what was Jesus' answer to this question? If He is asking, what is this for so many? And Jesus responds by feeding everybody, by not only just the 5,000, but by feeding the apostles, so much so that there are 12 baskets left over. So what is Jesus' answer? You have more than enough to meet people's needs. It is not about what you are capable of, but what Jesus is capable of doing through you. It is not about you. It is about God. And that should frustrate you just a little bit, because I want things to be about me, right? I want to be the center of this miracle. I want the apostles to be the center of this miracle. But it is not about me. It is about God. Jesus enters into our lives to ensure that we have more than enough to overcome. So let's see how the crowd responds to this miracle. Skip ahead to verse 22 of John chapter 6. And we're going to continue reading from there. "On the next day, the crowd that remained on the other side of the sea saw that there had been only one boat there, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with his disciples, but that his disciples had gone away alone. And the other boats from Tiberias came near, and the place where they had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. So when the crowd saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they themselves got into the boat and went to Capernaum seeking Jesus. When they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, 'Rabbi, when did you come here?' Jesus answered them, 'Truly, truly, I say to you, you are seeking me not because you saw signs, because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not labor for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. For on him God the Father has set his seal.' When they said this, 'What must we do to be doing the works of God?' Jesus answered them, 'This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent.' So they said to him, 'Then what sign do you do, that we may see and believe you? What work do you perform?' 'Our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, 'He gave them bread from heaven to eat.' And Jesus then said to him, Truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gave you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. They said to him, Sir, give us this bread always. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. Here is our second obstacle. They prioritized their own needs over the message and the purpose of Jesus. They thought that they could get the social justice Jesus free from the life-changing Jesus. And don't get me wrong. Jesus healed and fed and forgave freely and without prerequisites. But he never left people confused about his purpose or his power. They may not have known his name, but they knew he was from God. Many of the miracles we read that Jesus did, he left immediately after. He never presented a sermon. He never told them even what they should do afterwards. But they never doubted where he came from. They never doubted his purpose. They never doubted his power. Jesus even references Exodus chapter 16 and verse 4, where it says, Then the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. See, they believed that God's reason to exist was to provide them with independence, food, and a king. Are we any different? How many times have we offered to God, instead of a humble submission to his will, a list of things that we want? How many times have we stepped before the throne room of God, and instead of giving our hearts, we give him our wish list? And we say, God, we want a car, and we want a house, and we want to be comfortable, and we want healthy children, and we want, and we want, and we want. Give us these things. And the truth is, God is completely willing and prepared to give them all of these things, but on his terms and not theirs. He is willing to offer them a king. He is willing to offer them food. He is willing to offer them provisions. But it is on God's terms and not theirs. He is willing to give us what we want, but we have to be prepared to accept them on his terms, by his authority. And this is the social justice Jesus that we may disagree with. Because our needs come first. If we look and we see every advertisement directed towards us, we are fed this lie that we are the most important thing on this planet. That we are all that exists and ever will exist. And if you want a car, no. You deserve a car. You deserve a house. You deserve this American dream. It belongs to you. And so we want these things because we do. Because we believe we have earned them. And this is not how God works with his people. God is prepared to give you everything. But it will be because he decides and not because of you. Can we accept his purpose, his power, and his authority, even if he doesn't feed you? What if he lets you suffer? What if you're the one person who wasn't healed? What if you're the one paralyzed individual who Jesus passes over? What if you're the next group of people who are hungry and come to Jesus for food, and he doesn't give you any? Are you still then willing to accept Jesus' authority, Jesus' purpose, and his power? Can you accept it then? Because I believe that's the miracle. To accept these things on his terms and not ours, it is almost impossible. But he asks us to do it anyway. So what is the purpose here? If Jesus is representing himself as the bread, then God has given Jesus to us freely, abundantly, and without personal cost, and with minimal faith on our part. However, his expectation of us, once we are fed, is enormous and sometimes seemingly impossible. He asks his servants to serve the masses, and we must do likewise. We are free to use our imagination. When Jesus looks at this church here in Ventura, which he has put here specifically to serve Ventura, he frees us and says, you can use your imagination in serving this community. That while you are here, you are to be about Jesus' work. And that is feeding and healing and serving and demonstrating to others just who God is. We are the poor beggars showing other beggars where to find bread. And lastly, your needs take a back seat to the message and purpose of Jesus Christ. This is the core of Christian maturity. Someone put it to me like this, and at first I was really offended because I was an immature person. But as I matured, I've seen the truth in this statement. Mature people never get what they want. Immature people always get what they want. So who would you rather be? If you have any needs at all, in your life or in the lives of others that you may know, if you need any act of service, if you need anything at all, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.